This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, October 27th, 2014 edition of Invest Talk, and I'm glad you are all with us on this Monday show. And you know, today was the end of an era. The end of, well, at least right now it seems like the end of the era, but today was the last day of QE, quantitative easing. I think it's pretty eventful, I think, after trillions and trillions of dollars of Federal Reserve intervention and money printing. You know, where is the market going to head going forward? Right, I think that's a big question that's going to be asked. I think the market is really on pause for what Janet Yellen's going to say on Wednesday. The Fed starts their meeting tomorrow, and they announce the results of their meeting on Wednesday, and I think it'll be very, very interesting. And today was the last day of QE, at least scheduled QE. You know, they could start it again at some point, but from this round of QE, it is officially over. Now, thank you for being with us on today's show. And our main talking point today is the bond market, more fragile than you think. So we welcome all of our Monday Invest Talk listeners, and Invest Talk is kind of a roundtable discussion. We hope you'll be part of it. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us by phone whenever and wherever you listen. And remember, if you're traveling, you can always hear us live 4 to 5 Pacific time on investtalk.com. Or use our Anywhere app ready for you on Invest Talk. It's a TuneIn Radio. You can stream our show live from our most popular station is in the Bay Area, AM 1220. So if you have that app, you can go there, download TuneIn Radio. It's free. Search for 1220 KDOW, and boom, you can listen to it. You don't even have to be in the Bay Area. You can be anywhere in the world and get our show live streaming. Now, we often hear from listeners who are just starting out on their investing journey, and they can be really of any age, from, you know, in their teens to in their 60s. But they're, you know, it doesn't matter. You're just beginning, and they're trying to have a more active role in their retirement portfolio and giving it a chance to grow. And a lot of times they're graduating from having their 401ks just sit there to investing it properly for what their needs are. So here are three suggestions for you, especially if you're very reluctant to expose yourself to too much risk. First, before you do anything, learn about the various types of investments. You know, we try to grow our knowledge, grow your knowledge base on this program, but you need to look further. If you're absolutely brand new to investing, get the lay of the land first. What are your alternatives? What are your opportunities out there? What can you invest in? It's not just about stocks. Not all stocks are created equal. Not all countries are created equal. Not all asset classes are created equal. And there's subsets of each asset class. So you have to understand the lay of the land. You know, read some basic books, simple books to help you understand the marketplace. Do your research. And there's plenty of tools online, and we are just one of them. Now, second, you can keep your costs low and your strategy simple. That's important, is to keep your strategy simple, especially in the beginning stages. You know, complex strategies are, you know, a lot of people might chase them because they think they get great performance or whatever, but usually you're going to bite yourself, you know, you're gonna cause yourself more grief in the short term than you will help in the long term. You know, a lot of people like options. They think options is a great way to make a ton of money. Well, options are very complicated and they can be very risky. And if you're new to investing, probably not a good place you want to be, you know, dabbling it, because they get pretty complex. Third, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. Don't get in over your head. Just because you read a book and you made a good trade or two, and you think the light bulb just flashed on in your head, don't try to be a hero. It's when little mistakes turn into big mistakes. It's when you buy and sell at less than optimal times because you're using emotion. And that's usually the biggest problem for the average investor. For the new investor, is they get in too quickly, they think they know it all too soon, and that causes them big problems eventually. So what is your question today? Now, it's healthy to have questions. We all have questions. I have questions each and every day. There's always stuff that I'm looking up and trying to find answers for each and every day. And you should have questions on your mind too. If you're not, it means you're not paying enough attention. It means you're not thinking about enough things. And sometimes they can be simple questions. And you can talk to us live, 4 to 5 Pacific time, on Invest Talk, or in between times, just leave your question, and we will answer it on the next show. Here's our first question of the day from our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, it's Lance from Pacific Grove. I'm listening to you on 1220 AM, and I'm wondering, I have an extra money coming in, roughly $2,000 a month. I'm already maxed out of my 401. What would you recommend I do with this money, $2,000 extra each month for an investment? I'm 66 years old. I'm going to retire in 18 months. Thank you very much.
Going to retire in 18 months, and he has $2,000 a month extra. That's a very good question. I mean, he probably has a high income level if he has extra $2,000 a month, I would assume. I would explore putting that money into a Roth IRA, maybe even a regular IRA. Talk to your accountant, because there are intricate rules based on when you put money in a 401k and how much money you earn. So that's the first thing I would turn to. Second, what is this money for? Is this money for retirement? Or is this money maybe for your kids or grandkids? Do you think you're going to need this money eventually in your retirement years? That's a big question. So you got to know I need to know your time horizon. I'm going to assume that you want this money for retirement. You need this money for retirement. I would probably start with something like a conservative to moderate risk mutual fund. There's a lot of great ones out there, and they meld high-grade corporate bonds with dividend paying stocks, blue chip stocks. There's some good ones out there. I can't really say off the top of my head this is the best one to be in. These are the type of situations where I like to see the whole picture, and this is what we do with clients. It's hard for somebody to say, okay, well, I have $2,000 a month, or I have $10,000, or I have $20,000, whatever, where should I put it? Well, a lot of it depends. Like I said, your time horizon, what's your risk profile? Are you an aggressive investor, or are you a conservative investor? Are you moderate? What's your risk tolerance? What are your needs going into retirement? You're retiring in a couple years, but is your health good? Is your health poor? How much money do you have? Maybe you have a ton of money. If you have $2,000 extra a month and you're already maxing out your 401k, and you've been doing this for a while, you probably have a lot of money saved. And maybe you don't need to take a lot of risk. So to be honest, I would say the first thing I would do is go to our website, fill out the free risk questionnaire, put your phone number in there, and we'll give you a call. And Steve will give you a call, I'll give you a call, whoever you want to give you a call will help you get the big picture into focus. Because, right now it sounds like you're focusing on this little $2,000 a month, and, I hope that you're focused on the bigger picture, because that's really what matters. And that's why it's hard for me to say that $2,000 should go in this type of investment, because there are so many ways it could go, and so many reasons why you would put money in certain places. So give us a call. We want a little more feedback, and we can help you a little bit more. Now, there's another way to get into the conversation on InvestTalk to get your questions to us. You can follow us on Twitter and send a message to us via Twitter now to the handle at InvestTalk. It's InvestTalk with two T's. You can get your question to us the same way, and we have a few of those coming up on the show. Or you can always call our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Thinking about this, when everyone moves to unload them, will there be anyone to buy? The bond market, more fragile than you think. That's one of our talking points today. What's yours? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Justin right now.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question on today's show. Now, our main talking point today is about the bond market, more fragile than you think. I want to touch, I think this is an important one because there's some people that have bond funds and bond holdings, and you know, a lot of the regulations around Dodd-Frank and the goal to reduce risk in the financial system, I think it's had some unintended consequences, and that's pretty typical for regulation. You know, usually it has some unintended consequences that are not understood until they rear their ugly head. And this is, I think, a potential one. And some pretty big players are talking about it. It's not just me. It's the likes of Mohammed El Arian, the former CEO of PIMCO, the BlackRock. Portfolio manager at BlackRock is talking about it. A head strategist at JP Morgan is talking about it. So there's a lot of people discussing this, and I think it's something that everybody should have their eye on. So we're going to touch on that. I also want to talk about the economic report that came out today. Pending home sales in the U.S., it increased less than forecast, and I want to talk a little bit more about that and what it means for the housing market going forward. I also want to discuss China's foreign reserves. They fell by the end of June, which, you know, obviously this is backwards looking, but I think it is telling us something, and I want to touch on what that means going forward. And then 401k and IRA changes coming in 2015. There's some rules changes, and I want to touch on that as well. And then we have four questions. We're a little backed up. Steve didn't answer them last week, but we're going to get to them. Most of them were asked early last week. We're going to touch on Zillow, AT&T, and Verizon. Stock NRZ is a symbol. Talk about diversification. There's four big questions that are coming from us via Twitter, our Twitter handle, and we're going to touch on that as well. So those are our talking points today. Those are the main things that we're going to touch on. Let's do a quick look at today's market. The S&P was down 3 points. The Dow was up 12 points. The NASDAQ up 2. We had the end of QE this morning, the last bout of QE, and Fed starts discussing that tomorrow. They're going to announce their report or whatever they're going to say on interest rates on Wednesday, and I think it'll be very interesting to see how the market reacts to that. Now, how to position aggressive, moderate, or conservative portfolios. That's just one of the topics to be tackled on our Wednesday Wealth webinar coming up November 12th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. We'll tell you more about it as the date gets closer.
Thanks for being a podcast subscriber, and we do want to hear your investing experiences. We've all grown over the years through our experiences, good and bad. You get to be anonymous, and the rest of us will enjoy knowing that we're not the only one to make a turn when maybe we should have gone straight. So we hope you'll join us on the podcast. Thanks for listening. This is the Monday, October 27th edition of Invest Talk. The word investment can cause people to buy a bigger house than they actually need. Why your home isn't a good investment. That's our talking point on the next Invest Talk. Please join us then. Of course, there's still plenty of time to get in touch today. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Jerry in Utah. How are you doing, Jerry?
Really good, Justin. How are you?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Great. I've got a question about a stock, Tesoro Logistics. Okay. T as in Tom, L as in Larry, L as in Larry, P as in Paul.
Okay.
And the question I have is very specifically about some insider purchases off the SEC Form 4 that was done a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not exactly sure who purchased it. It's unclear to me.
Okay. Are you saying an insider bought some shares?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Let me see if I can bring up what you're looking at real quick. Do you own it? Is that why? Are you looking to buy it?
I've been looking at it just because of the large insider trading that just occurred, and it was unclear to me off the SEC Form 4 who actually made this purchase of $500,000.
Let's see, direct purchase. Yeah, it was a director. So a director on their board purchased a lot of shares. 8.7 million shares.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of a lot. It's about 4% of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So
it seemed odd because when it's reported on the form, it doesn't list him or another person. It's listed as just Tesoro Corporation, which seems a little odd.
Yeah, that is a little weird. Maybe because it's... Let's see if I can bring this up a little bit more. It just says director. Yeah, I don't know. That could be... Maybe they're buying back shares? Could that be it?
It seems like they may be buying back shares, because if I looked at their 2011 up until 2012, their number of shares outstanding has gone from 15 to 17 to 32 to 38. Million, and it concerned me that their payout ratio is like 89% their dividend. So it seemed like they were just issuing more shares, but I couldn't tell with this recent SEC form. It's unclear.
Yeah, it definitely is unclear. I would I imagine this is probably them in turn. I mean, I can't imagine anybody. I mean, that's $500 million. That they repurchased.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine that maybe it says Tesoro Corporation. So that's probably what it is. Yeah, so it's Tesoro. So remember, this is Tesoro Logistics. This is kind of like a subsidiary. This is a master limited partnership. So what it looks like, mm-hmm, is that it's actually Tesoro, the parent company, that actually purchased about 8.7 million shares. So they're just taking a larger stake in that particular subsidiary. That's what it would be. And, you know, whether that's enough for me to buy it, I don't know if I would say that's enough for me to buy it, but it's at least that's the explanation that I would give of where that money came from. And that was on October 24th. So that was yesterday, or on Friday. So they obviously think it's cheap. But to me, I wouldn't say this is a reason to buy it, though. I would look at some other things, and I think this still could have some downside. And I've warned people a lot about this sector, the master limited partnership sector. The first thing everyone needs to understand, everyone focuses on the dividend, but people need to realize that dividend, your tax is your ordinary income tax rate. So it's not like a dividend from Procter & Gamble or Johnson & Johnson. You know, it's not taxed at that 20%.
Yeah, I get it now. That I was getting confused that there were two, because the name was the same, Tesoro and Tesoro.
Yeah, so Tesoro is just the bigger oil company, and this is a massive limited partnership that was spun off probably from Tesoro. I don't know when that was.
Right.
Back in 2011, it looks like. So it's definitely a different entity. They have a lot of debt, and this is that sector. That sector is filled with debt, and this is what worries me about this whole sector. It's not just that tax rate, but it's that level of debt that all of these master limited partnerships carry, and they usually don't have very high credit ratings. So if the junk bond market continues to suffer, you're probably going to see this industry suffer even more, and along with the fact that oil prices are falling, usually that has some sort of correlation to their cash flow as well. So I would be wary of Tesoro Logistics and just the whole sector as a whole.
It's interesting when companies do this, it's not then the same concept as just Apple buying back their own shares then.
It's somewhat similar, but it's probably treated as a subsidiary on the balance sheet, and they're just going to take a larger portion of the balance sheet. Instead of going, having cash on the balance sheet, it's now shares in Tesoro Logistics, and so it obviously increases the risk level in Tesoro's overall stock, but I don't think it really changes a whole lot of the outlook for Tesoro Logistics. It's just the fact that the parent company owns a little bit more.
Great. Now that's a key insight. Appreciate the info.
Thanks for calling. Now our next day for portfolio reviews is at our home office in Southern California. It's October 29th, a couple days away in Dana Point. There's a new date for retirement reviews in San Ramon. That's November 19th. You don't need an account with KP Financial, just an interest in a professional second opinion. And there's certainly no obligation of any kind. Just go to investtalk.com, click on the Make an Appointment button, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
You're listening to Invest Talk. Looking for a way to get more bang from your 401k buck? Why not fire off a question about it right now? 888-99-CHART. Justin is here for you.
Let's get to one of those Twitter questions now. And Bugatta tweeted, "What is your opinion on Zillow?" The symbol is Z. And this is a internet portal for everything real estate. The largest out there. They bought Trulia recently. It's come back from about $160 a share in late July. Now it's at $105.55. So it's definitely off a decent amount. Now technically, it's definitely weak. It's still weak. It's below the 200-day moving average. I think it still continues lower. It is near. It has that some support around this $100 level, but I think eventually, it goes much, much lower and probably heads down into the 76, 75 range, maybe even into the high 50s. I think that's this area where I would pick it up. It's a good company, and I think it is the future to finding real estate. I think it's nice to have an agent, but people like to search for homes online and get more information. It really is a good portal to find more information about the market as a whole. The biggest problem right now, I think, is real estate is cooling. And you saw that from the pending home sales report today. So I would say it is short-term oversold. Short-term has some support, but I think it's still very expensive. I mean, they're only going to make 38 cents a share this year and projected to make 93 cents next year, and that's supposed to be in a cooling housing market. I find it hard to believe they're actually going to achieve that 93 cents. And say they even exceed it. Say they get a buck. Well, that means their P's over 100. 105 at a buck a share. And I just don't see them growing that fast. So I think this is a very overvalued stock. They don't have a lot of debt, which is good. But I would say I wouldn't touch this until it gets at least to $75 a share. And I would start to think about it seriously. I would start to minorly think about it at 75. I would really start to think about it if it gets below that 60 level. That's where I would pick up Zillow, but not until then. So that is my opinion on Zillow. So thanks for sending us that tweet, Bugatta. Now, our main talking point today is about the bond market and some major risks that I think are prevalent in the bond market in today's day and age. And the reason is because of more regulation. And, you know, Main Street investors have poured about $1 trillion into bonds since the financial crisis. Why? Because Fed's buying up bonds. People want to be more conservative, and bonds historically are more conservative. And, you know, the fear now is that when people go to unload, there won't be anyone to buy because of the regulations that have been put in place to reduce the risk for banks. You know, banks used to be the ones to step in and buy bonds when bonds sold off. Well, that's no longer the case. Or I mean, it's not the case. It's a lot less than it used to be. You know, banks used to be the middlemen. They used to match buyers and sellers when, you know, interest rates rose or bond prices sold off, but regulators are limiting that activity, and they've largely abandoned their role as a buyer or seller of last resort in the bond market. And they've slashed their stash of bonds by 80% since 2007, meaning the amount of bonds that they had on their balance sheet to sell to investors, or maybe what they would buy from investors when the market sold off, that has declined 80% according to State Street Global Advisors since 2007, and that means that there's a lot less liquidity. The frequency and volume of trades really have plunged. The average muni bond fund now changes hands half as much as it did in 2006, and overall corporate bond trading has dropped by more than a third. And when you had the taper tantrum last year, managers sold bonds from countries like Indonesia, Turkey, South Africa, Brazil. They sold them first because they were worried about the value of those currencies. So the big risk now are crowded trades going in reverse. So what happens when all these trades that everyone's in the marketplace, not just mutual funds, not just ETFs, which were a lot of the big growth of assets is coming from, but hedge funds, pension funds, sovereign debt funds, private equity funds. You know, a lot of times when these big investors, you know, big institutions are investing in bonds, they're usually leveraged trades, means they're borrowing money for these trades, because they'll borrow at 2%, they'll get 5 or 6%, and they'll leverage that up 5-10 times, and they'll get 20-30% return. And that's great until the value of those bonds start declining, and then you have to sell, liquidate your position, and then you're forced to sell, and that can cause big problems. In 2004, when interest rates started going up, investors barely flinched. But in 1994, investors fled with a panic, and it caused big problems. Big investors like hedge funds were hit hard. Counties like Orange County, California, where we are right now, they filed for bankruptcy. And this is really a big issue. You know, investors have pulled billions of dollars out of junk bond funds in July, and that was okay. The market handled that, because interest rates didn't really go up. But what happens when interest rates go up and you're having a flight away from corporate bonds? That can be a big issue. And, you know, Mohammed El-Arian, the CEO, former CEO of PIMCO, thinks ordinary investors are too blasé about the flaws in the trading system nowadays. There's a lot of liquidity risk. And he says it's only when you try to put a lot of things through the pipe that they realize they've got a big problem. So this is something I think everybody should be cognizant of and understand that don't get too, I think you want to diversify yourself. If you are invested in bonds, you want to make sure that what you have or what assets are held within the funds or ETFs that you hold are liquid. And if they're not, that can be a big, big issue. And, Deutsche Bank issued a 104-page report that says some bonds are exhibiting bubble tendencies. And if that bubble tendency starts to normalize itself, I think we're all in for a kind of a rude awakening. So something everyone needs to be cognizant of. Now, InvestTalk insiders have access to our complete library of past wealth webinars and a whole range of investing topics. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com and scroll down to the Join Now button right next to InvestTalk Insider.
This tool measures your capacity for risk. Try it for free. It's a risk analyzer, and it can tell you how you match up with your retirement portfolio today. Try it out. Just takes about 3 minutes, and it's there for you on investtalk.com.
Hello, my name is Donald. I'm interested in knowing a little bit about RGLS. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, RGLS. This is a Regulus Pharmaceuticals, Regulus Therapeutics. This is a biotech company, and it's had a big, big jump recently. Probably why he's asking about it. So he's probably doing what a lot of investors do: chase performance. It's gone from, about $6.88 at the close of, when was that? Friday, Thursday, about close of Tuesday of last week, and today it closed at $18.47. So it's up 200% in just a few trading days. They don't make any money. They're not projected to make any money. This is a lottery ticket, and somebody won. It's had a big move. It's definitely overbought. It's near its max. It's not going to go much higher in the short term. I'll tell you that much. If it stays around here and can consolidate and work off this overbought condition, it could go higher. But this is just really, it's a lottery ticket. I wouldn't be buying this. High risk. If you're going to invest in it, being a very, very small percentage of your portfolio, close at $18.47 today. Well, guess what? It's down $1.16 after hours, 6.28%. And the reason is because it's going to issue more shares. It's smart. It sees everyone's excited about it, and it's going to sell its shares at a high price because they know this probably is too high of a price for its own stock, and that's why it's down. So I would stay away from this. This is something that it's so hard to predict. They had good news about, I forgot what it was. It was a hepatitis C treatment. They had good news on their clinical trials, and the stock went up 100%, 200% in a couple, four days, and now it's issuing stocks, so it's probably come back down to earth. There's really no rhyme or reason of what the value could be. It's all hype. This is just a lottery ticket, and those that bought the lottery ticket today are probably going to be hurting tomorrow because it's going to be down pretty nicely, and this is the nature of these things. These are biotech companies, and they're wild, so I would stay away from it. Now, there's a Twitter message from Henning, and he says, Steve and Justin, great show as always. Question on diversification of a 100% share portfolio. How many stocks and core sectors? I'm assuming he means 100%. When he says 100% share portfolio, I'm just thinking 100% in equities is what it sounds like he's saying. Well, first, we say I think at least 20 stocks. We usually have around 25 to 35 stocks in our portfolio at any given time. So I think that's a good diversification. I think if you get over 50 stocks, you start to get too diversified, and you don't have enough differentiation between the assets in your portfolio, the companies in your portfolio. So I would say, 25 to 35 is a good number, a good range to stay in. And then core sectors, how many sectors should you have? I think it's okay to avoid certain sectors generally. We haven't been in, coal stocks for a long time. We've only had, I think, one oil position up until, recently. We sold it. So I think it's okay to avoid certain sectors. I think tech is always a good core sector to have. It's such a growing part of our economy. You should always have that sector. Utilities are always a good diversifier because they're less correlated with the overall market. I think that's always to have a utility or two is not a bad way to go. What else? Retail, if we're in a recession, almost all retail is not going to do very well. So that's a sector you could avoid entirely. But there's always the great pure plays that are just market leaders. Think of Walmarts of the world as a core holding. That I'm not saying you should go out and buy Walmart. I'm just saying it's not a bad idea to have a big utility like Walmart be a core holding of yours, obviously at a good value. So that would be my answer to that question. And a lot more goes into it. Risk tolerance. What is your risk tolerance? Are you aggressive? Are you conservative? What's your time horizon? There's so much more that goes into it that I could talk about it really for hours on end. So hopefully that helped you a little bit. But if you ever need any more answer, anything further on that topic, always feel free to give us a call at our office, send us an email, go to investtalk.com, click on the contact Justin, contact Steve button, and that will go straight to us as well. So thanks for your question, Henning. Now, one of our talking points today is about the pending home sales report that came out today. And the report said that pending home sales index increased 0.3% after dropping 1% in August. Now, the median projections from Bloomberg Economist was 1%, positive 1%. So it missed estimates. And it's just showing that there's still some pretty tight credit in the housing market. Low inventories remain big hurdles for the industry. And first-time home buyers are struggling to enter the market. And why is that? Because they can't garner 20% down. It's hard to get 20% down. And I think that's healthy. I don't think any housing market that relies on 3.5% down is a healthy housing market. A healthy housing market is low enough to where the average person making decent amount of money can save and put 20% down. Should not be relying on 3.5% down. Now, obviously, that can be a subset of the market, but that shouldn't be the dominant part of the market. And, first-time home buyers should be a dominant part of the market, and they just can't do it. So the housing market still is kind of on its back foot and needs to gain some traction here soon. And the biggest declines were in the Midwest and the West. And it's just showing that it's not a healthy marketplace. Now, we do have just a few more minutes to get your question in. Please give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast coming up on the next Invest Talk. The word investment can cause people to buy a bigger house than they actually need. Why your home isn't a good investment. That's our talking point for Tuesday, October 28th, and we hope you'll listen to that podcast. If you have a question for Steve or Justin, you can ask it anytime at 888-99-CHART, and they'll answer it on the next podcast. This is Invest Talk. More free advice now from the archives. It's not how much money you make, but how much money you keep, how hard it works for you, and how many generations you keep it for. Robert Kiyosaki, we're glad you invested this hour with us today. Once again, here's portfolio manager Justin Klein.
888-99 chart, 888-992-4278. We have 5 minutes left in the show, so if you want to ask your question, get your question in now. Now, there is some 401k and IRA changes coming up in the new year. I know we're only a couple months away from the new year. It'll be November before you know it. I think, Saturday is the first day of November. And there are some new changes. And the first one is the MIRA. The MIRA, there's a new type of savings account that's coming out of the Treasury, and will offer a new type of retirement account beginning in late 2014 that is guaranteed by the government to never lose value. And deposits will be made via payroll deduction, and accounts will be open with initial deposit with as little as $25. And then direct deposit of $5 or more each payday. But these accounts are not tied to your job, so they're portable if you change jobs. Savers with annual incomes of less than $129,000 for individuals and less than $121,000 for couples will be eligible to participate. And this is an account that's targeting low and middle income Americans who don't currently have access to an employer-sponsored plan, such as 401k, 403b, 457, or thrift savings plan, something like that, right? Now, the MIRA is really a Roth account, Roth IRA, which means contributions can be withdrawn tax-free at any time, and earnings can be distributed without triggering an additional tax once the account is 5 years old, and the account owner is at least 59 and a half. So you can take out the earnings, right, when the account is at least 5 years old and you're 59 and a half. But remember, the contributions is like a Roth, so the contributions are not tax deductible. Now, the money goes into savings bonds backed by the U.S. Treasury that are guaranteed not to lose value, and there are no fees. Now, the savers can use the accounts for up to 30 years or until their balance grows to $15,000, at which point it must be transferred to a private sector retirement account like an IRA. If you roll it over into an IRA, I prefer probably a Roth IRA. Right? This probably sounds good, and it's probably not a bad way for people who don't have a lot of money to save, but I'm sure your returns on a government-backed retirement savings bond probably aren't going to be that good. So there's that. And then higher 401k contribution limits. It's going to go up about $500, so from $17,500 to $18,000 for 401k contributions, 403b, 457s, thrift savings plans. And then the catch-up contribution, if you're over the age of 50, will also go up $500, so that'll be $6,000. So total, if you're over 50, you'll be able to put in a total of $24,000 in 2015. IRA contribution limits will not change. Still $5,500 and $1,000 catch-up if you're over the age of 50. So if you're over age 50, it'll be $6,500. The income limits will go up a little bit. I'm not going to bore you with the actual numbers, but they're going to go up a little bit because there's limits to how much you can put into an IRA if you make too much money. Same with Roth IRAs. Those cutoff limits will go up as well. And that's really about it. And should always check with your accountant to make sure that whatever money you're putting into an IRA is okay with amount of money you're making, and it makes sense. Now let's answer one more question from our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Bobby from Atlanta, Georgia. Do you think of Baker Hughes? Ticker symbol is B is a boy, H is a house, I is in India. I don't own any, but it's dropped recently, obviously because of the oil plunge, and I look forward to buying some for the next 10, 15 years. Thank you. Bye.
All right, he's looking at Baker Hughes. BHI is the symbol, and this is an large oil driller, $22 billion company. It has fallen pretty hard, $75 in the summer. Now it's down to $51. I think this is a start of a good buying opportunity. If you're looking long term, I would start your position here. Start buying a little bit, but I do think it will continue lower. It's a good company, and I like what you're thinking. Start your position now, maybe 10 to 20% of what you're ultimately going to buy. but I do think it'll continue lower and you'll get a better price. I think ultimately it gets down into the 30s, and that's when I would really start to get aggressive. That was Baker Hughes, B-H-I is the symbol. Now, before we close this hour, one of our most comprehensive webinars ever is coming up on November 12th, 6:30 Pacific time is the date and time. This is an A to Z retirement planning guide. To sign up for free, just go to investtalk.com. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. From